to live. 30 days to live. What would you do? How would you live your life different if you found out that you had 30 days to live? I told you about death clock. I found out that I'm leaving on July the 13th, 2051. Did anybody go to death clock and find out when they're leaving? Anybody? You didn't? Okay, but I'm leaving in June, and I'll settle for that. July the 13th, 2051. We don't know when we're going. We know that we can do some things to extend our life. We don't have control on when we got here, and we don't have complete control over the day that we go. But one thing that we do have control of is the space between the time we get here and the time that we leave. I have stood at the bed of many people who knew that they were facing eternity, and they looked up at me and they said, "I wish I had. If only I had done this. I wish I had." And you, all kinds of different things. Do you really want to come to the end of your life with regret? We should never want to come to the end of our life with any regrets. We should live life to the fullest. Psalms 90 verse 12 says, "So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." See, we need to live our lives with the end in mind. The way that you live your life determines your end. The things that you choose in this life determines your eternity. The things that you do in this life determines how you live in eternity. And I'm talking about in heaven. Heaven is not going to be everybody's equal. Did you know that? Oh yeah, we're all going to be equal in heaven. No, we're not. There's going to be people who have wonderful, great rewards in heaven. I mean, tremendous rewards. And there are going to be people who are there. And that's all you can say about them. Because they accepted Jesus as Lord, but they never did anything with their life. They lived their lives for themselves. And when we go before the beam of judgment of Christ, everything that they did in this life, they did it for the wrong reason, and it'll be burned up. And they'll be there. Now, will it be good to be in heaven? Yeah. But they determine the way they live eternity by the way and the choices that they make in this life. I want to live my life to the fullest. I don't know about you. And this is why we're doing this series called 30 Days to Live. Living with the end in mind. See, one thing that we all know is that we're all destined to die. We're all destined to die. Everybody, unless Jesus comes, is going to die. And another thing that we're all going to do is we're going to stand before the judgment. And I don't say that to, you know, scare people or anything like that. It's just a fact. It's destined to man to die once, and after that, the judgment. Last week, we talked about living life with passion and purpose. And some of the things that we talked about is getting out of the someday syndrome. One of these days, when everything falls right, then I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that, or I'm going to get involved in church, or I'm going to read my Bible. Someday when? It's called the someday syndrome. How many of you know that someday doesn't come? Someday doesn't come. Today is your life. Yesterday was your life. Tomorrow will be your life. Today is your life. How are you spending it? How are you spending it? And this is the thing that we need to think about. Then we talked about time being our most valuable thing. Above everything else that you got, the way that you manage your time is more important. You can waste money and get more. But when you waste time, you spent that piece of time, and it's gone forever. It's gone forever. So time is the most valuable asset that we have. Then we talked about your most important connection. If you don't get this connection right, nothing else really matters, and that's your connection with God through Jesus Christ. It's your relationship with Jesus. And everything in life, if we do it right, flows out of our relationship with God. Everything. There's not anything in life, if we do it right, that does not flow out of our direct relationship with God. See, when it's all said and done, it's you and Jesus. It's you and Jesus. Also, we talked about taking care of yourself. We have a responsibility to take care of our mind, to educate our mind. God didn't give you your brain for you to waste it. You have tremendous capacity in your mind. Don't ever say, you know what, I just don't have much of a mind. You have a tremendous mind. You have the ability to store more knowledge than any computer there is. In fact, Dr. Caroline Leaf made the statement, says that we have enough memory capacity to live for 3 million years. You've got tremendous mind capacity. Don't ever say that you don't have a mind, because you do have a mind. Also, we need to take care of our body. If you don't take care of your body, guess what? You're going to shorten your life. We have a responsibility. You don't own your mind. You don't own your body. God owns it. He gave it to you to manage. So we need to learn to manage those things. And then we talked about stepping out and taking risk. Life is a risk. Everything in life is a risk. If we live behind the walls of fear all the time, we'll never do anything great. We'll never do anything great. We can't be afraid to make some changes in our lives. We have to step out sometimes in the area of risk. I think about Abram. God told him to go to a place that he would tell him. And Abraham stepped out in faith, not knowing where he was going, but he was trusting God. If God puts a dream in your heart, guess what he's going to do? He's going to guide you. But you're not always going to see the end result. You're not always going to see the next step. So sometimes you have to take some risk in order to grow. Then we need to thaw out our dreams. Every one of us have dreams. You have wonderful dreams. You see yourself doing certain things. I remember as a teenager. That's a kid, isn't it? I was a kid. I saw myself preaching the gospel. But I was afraid. I was real afraid. And today I'm doing that. We all have dreams in our heart, and many times we allow our dreams to become frozen because somebody tells you you're not smart enough to do that. You're not, you're a woman, you can't do that, or you're this and you can't do that, or you don't have enough education, or you don't have this, and or you were raised on the wrong side of the track. You don't have enough money to do that. Sometimes we just need to thaw out our dreams and go for it. Take the risk. And then we talked about living life full throttle. You got one life to live. Let's live it wide open. Let's live it wide open. I'm not talking about being reckless. I'm talking about living our purpose. Living our purpose for God. I saw some of the stuff that was up here, and I saw Jim Busby's outreach that he has, and I'm thinking, yay, God. We have people who have a vision to do certain things in this church, and God is opening doors for people to do things in this church. And you can't be afraid to step through those doors and do some things. Well, you say, well, what if I fail? Let me give you some good advice. If you fail, fail forward. Fail forward. Don't fail backwards. Fail forward. Learn by your mistake and move on. Because you know what? We all fail. Every one of us have failed at certain things in our life. But you cannot allow failure to define who you are. Today we're going to talk about love completely. We're going to live, first of all, we talked about living a life of passion and purpose. But now today we're going to talk about loving completely. And I love this Corrie Ten Boom quote. She says, "The measure of a life is not only in its duration, but in its donation." It's not the longevity of life. There's people who live a long life and live very selfish lives. And it's not the duration of your life that counts. It's the donation that you make in your life. It's not what you get. It's not what you obtain. It's what you give. You will never be remembered by what you had, but you will be remembered by what you gave. Always understand that the only way that I know of to lay up treasures in heaven is to give. Is to give. Is to make a donation. And I'm not talking about money. That's part of it, but that's not all of it. You know, make a difference. Teach your children. Love your wife. Do things with your family. Be a friend. Be a witness. All of those kind of things. You're making a donation. So it's not in your duration, but it's in your donation. I know of people, I know of teenagers who have died prematurely. But yet they did more in their short life than a lot of people did who lived to be 100 years old. And so it's not the duration, it's the donation that you'll be remembered by. See, heaven is about relationships. Eternity is about relationships. The Bible is about relationships. Life is about relationships. Everything that we do is about relationships. God looked at man before He created woman, and He said, it is not good for man to be alone. So we were created by God for relationships. You know, you can have lots of stuff in life. And there's nothing wrong with having stuff. I like stuff. I like four-wheelers and motorboats and deer rifles and fishing poles. And I like all that kind of stuff. And you may like motorcycles and whatever it is you like. Shopping. You know, stuff that you buy when you shop. You may love your house. You may love your money. You may love money. There's a lot of things that we can love. But you know one thing that I know? That when you hurt, your stuff won't be there to put its arms around you. When you laugh and you have cause for rejoicing, there won't anybody be there. Your stuff won't be there to give you a high five and say, yay. We need people. We need relationships. So it's not about what we have. It's about the relationships that we have. You know what? In our investment in the people that we care about is the only legacy that has power to endure beyond our lifetime. The donation that we make with the people that we have relationships is the only thing that will endure beyond our lifetime. You can leave a lot of money to somebody, but that may not endure very long. You may leave possessions to somebody, but it may not endure very long. In fact, it won't produce anything of eternal value. But the investment that you make in people that you have relationships with, they can go on and produce generation after generation after generation. How many of you have a grandparent or a great-grandparent that was a great influence on your life? Somebody that, yeah, look at that. Look around. I had a great-grandpa that I saw the love of God in his life. He's the only grandpa that I remember. He was a great-grandpa. And I remember going and visiting him and seeing the glow of Jesus. You know, I was kind of raised in a stoic tradition, a real, you don't get too excited about God. You serve God, but you don't get excited. He was excited about God. He glowed. And that made such an impression on me. And I wasn't around him a whole lot. But every time I was around him, I remember the donation that he put into my life. And we can remember people in our lives that we have had some kind of relationship with who have had an impact. And their legacy lives on in what they invested in us. Our relationships are important. So we need to learn to love completely. See, we're designed by God to be in a relationship with Him vertically and with people horizontally. You don't get one without the other. In fact, the way that we relate this way is a reflection the way that we relate this way. And that's why I said a while ago that everything that you do in life has to, if you do it right, has to flow out of your relationship with God. See, Jesus said, really, He said the whole Scripture, the whole law is summed up in two commands. What is that? Love God with all of your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. If you will perfect those two things, you will always abound in the things of God. Can I say that again? If you perfect those two things, loving God with all of your heart and loving your neighbor as yourself, loving your fellow man as yourself, realizing that you were put here for a relationship, you will get the Christian life down. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be a theological genius in order to have impact. Now, there's nothing wrong with theology, but it's not how much you know, it's what you do with what you know. And it flows out of your relationship with God, and then it flows out to other people. It's relationship. Look at your neighbor and say, relationships. Yeah. Are y'all live this morning? Okay. Well, let me tell you some things about relationships. They are messy. How many of you know relationships are messy? They don't always flow like they should. They're just messy. Marriage is messy. Sibling relationships can be messy. On the job relationships can be messy. Now, Gail has the most perfect environment that she works in. But some of you have environments that are, you're in relationship with people that you work with, and they're very, very messy. We could go on and on and on. Friendships sometimes get messy. And we have the tendency many times that because something gets messy, we give up on it. Can I say something to you? Aren't you glad that when you get messy, that God don't give up on you? Whoo! Sometimes you get messy. Sometimes you and God, you quit listening to God and you quit obeying God. And aren't you glad that God doesn't just say, okay, I'm done with you. D-I-V-O-R-C-E. You're out the door. I disown you. I disown you. Aren't you glad that God's not that way? He's not. He loves us. He's committed to us. And guess what? If our relationship flows out to others from our relationship with God, even though life gets messy, guess what we're going to do? We're going to be like God. We're going to be like God. We need to be like Him. Ephesians 4:3 says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. It is our responsibility to try to get along with everybody that we can. That means that you are going to have to work on it. Well, what we want them to do is them to work on it. But guess what? You're not responsible for them. But you are responsible for you. You're responsible for your attitude. You're responsible for the choices that you make. You're not responsible for what your spouse does. You're responsible for what you do. You're not responsible for their attitude. You're responsible for your attitude. It's and relationships are so messy. But we have to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Romans 12:17-18 says this, because sometimes people don't cooperate. You ever had somebody that didn't cooperate? And what did you want to do? You want to smack them in the name of the Lord. You want to, you know. But it tells us this, do not repay anyone evil for evil. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Let me ask you a question. Don't raise your hand. Don't raise your hand. But do you always do everything that you can to get along? Or are you that contentious one? I got my hands behind my back. You can't raise my hands. You see, it's up to me to try to get along with people. It's up to me that when somebody does me wrong, I don't try to get even with them. Because who am I representing anyway? I don't represent me. I represent Him. Yeah, say, yeah, you a preacher. No. It has nothing to do with being a preacher. It has to do with being a Christian. And when we say we are Christian, then we're Christ-like. And therefore, it is our responsibility, as far as it depends on us, to try to make relationship strong. Have you ever said, you know, that person just gets on my last nerve? I'm just going to. And you know what? It gets to where people don't want to hear you talk because you're the messy one. Okay. I told you not raise your hand. So we got to talk about something that's real big. Forgiveness. But I say forgiveness. Matthew 5:23 says, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you. Not you have something against your brother, but your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. See, it's been said that he who cannot forgive destroys the bridge over which he himself must cross. See, if we're going to be in a relationship with God, you're not perfect. Remember what I was talking about? You get messy sometimes. You cop an attitude sometimes. And we ask God to forgive us. But when we don't forgive our others who hack us off, guess what? We destroy the bridge over which we ourselves must cross. So do we have a choice about forgiveness? We do. But what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to forgive, aren't we? Martin Luther King says, he who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. If you cannot forgive, you cannot love. Another quote I like, and then we'll move to the next point. It says, someone observed that to forgive is to set a prisoner free and to discover that that prisoner is me. To forgive is to set a prisoner free and to discover that that prisoner is me. See, it's to your advantage to forgive. It's to your advantage to release things, because when you harbor unforgiveness in your heart, you hurt yourself. You damage your fellowship with God. You damage your future fellowship with God, because the Bible commands us to forgive. So in order for us to forgive, sometimes we have to overcome the obstacles to unity. And man, what are some of our obstacles to unity? Number one, misunderstanding. I've seen this a lot in years of ministry, when people get into it and you really get down to the brass tacks of what's going on. More of it's about one misunderstanding the other than someone being devious. There's a lot of people who just, they don't communicate, so they don't understand. They misunderstand. You know, my wife has a tremendous ability. I'm going to get in trouble, okay? I know I'm going to get in trouble now. But that's okay. Makes a good sermon illustration. My wife has tremendous insight. She can read my mind. She can read my mind, and she can tell me what I meant by what I was thinking, by the expression on my face. Is anybody else wives got that gift? Any of you wives got that gift? Yeah. Woo! And sometimes I can say something and I know what I meant, and she hears what she thought I said. Or I could, let's turn it around, and sometimes she might say something and I misunderstand what she says and I get offended. So a lot of times, unity is sacrificed because we don't take time to understand. We misunderstand and we misinterpret. A lot of times we think back about, well, you did that before, so that's what you meant this time. Not necessarily. The second one is me first. This will destroy more relationships than any other thing. This will destroy marriages. This will destroy families. This will destroy things in the business place when it's all about me. It's all about me. And you got a person that's very me-centered, very selfish-centered, and all of a sudden, it's a breakdown of relationship. How many of you like selfish people? Nobody likes selfish people. Let me ask another question. Don't raise your hand. How many of you are selfish people? So we need to look at that too. Am I being me first in a relationship? That is an obstacle to unity. Then the third one is just mistakes. We just open mouth, insert foot. You ever done that? Oh. Have you done that with your spouse? Have you ever done that? Honey, does this dress make me look... And before you think, you just make a mistake. You say the wrong thing. Or you mean something good, and you just say the wrong thing. You make a mistake. We're not perfect human beings, and we make mistakes. Have we got to be willing to forgive? Yes. And these can be obstacles to unity. See, we must choose to accept people where they are, and if we can, help them move on. See, the inclination, if somebody rubs me the wrong way, we're going to talk about that in a minute, is to not have a relationship with them because they bother me. That's not the solution. Because we have a responsibility to all men. So let's talk about resolving conflicts just a little bit. Can we do that? If we're going to learn to love completely, we got to learn how to resolve conflicts. And there's all kinds of fighters. There's a good illustration in the boxing ring. There's kinds of fighters. How many remember Muhammad Ali? What was his style? Rope-a-dope. I'm a rope-a-dope fighter. You know what rope-a-dope does? He lays back on the ropes and lets that other person just punch themselves out. He's not fighting. He's not going to get in conflict. He avoids conflict. And he's a rope-a-dope fighter. Does that work? No. Because sometimes you need to be able to discuss some things. Sometimes you need to learn. We need to learn how to fight fair. We need to learn how to interchange, and it's a fight sometimes. It's, you know, it don't have to be vicious or anything, but we need to learn how to fight fair. Rope-a-dope is not a good style. Then you got the knockout artist. He walks in and he's, boom, I win. That's the way some people fight. They're knockout artists. And they go for the jugular. They go for the knockout every time. There's no discussion. I knock you out. I win. You submit. Then the next one is the take the fall guy. And this is the person who takes the dive. He's in there for just a minute and says, okay, I was wrong. Hits the floor. Does that solve problems? No. That masks problems. So there's all kinds of way that people fight. Taking the fall is not the right way to do it. Then we have the 1-2 puncher. And it's give and take. Give and take. Give and take. That's a little bit better because interaction is going on. But maybe nobody wins in this one. But the best way to fight is called the sparring partner. The sparring partner. This is the sparring partner is the guy who fights with the guy. And he's not in there to just win. He's in there to improve the other person. And sometimes when we get in conflict, that needs to be our mindset that I'm not in this thing to win, but I'm in this for the improvement of my relationship. So in life, we need to learn how to fight fair. Don't go for the knockout. Don't go for all of those kind of things. That brings us to the next area that we want to talk about real fast, and it's called difficult people. Look at your neighbor and say, is he talking about you now? Difficult people. We all have difficult people that we meet sometime. And these difficult people are like sandpaper. When you get around them, and most of us have people that we work with. Let's don't talk about marriage with this one, okay? You know, if your spouse rubs you raw, ooh, baby. You need some counseling, okay? But sometimes on the job, we have people who just rub us raw. And if we're not careful, we push those people away and we don't have relationships. And we are all about what? Relationships. See, we're supposed to be all things to all men that we by all means might win some. And even the difficult people in our lives, and there's a bunch of difficult people out there. In fact, you may think that everybody that's not like you is difficult. And that may make you a difficult person. But there are difficult people. And so what do we do about difficult people? Well, number one, we need to think about something. What makes them difficult? See, everybody is afraid of something. Everybody has fears in their life. Everybody loves something. And everybody has lost something. Everybody's life has been messy. And we have had experiences that have shaped us and helped make us who we are. Instead of when you see somebody that's like sandpaper, you push them away and don't have a relationship, maybe we need to seek to try to understand where they have been and what they have been through. Amen? Okay. Y'all still with me? We're about done. Now, let's describe some difficult people. Number one is the perfectionist. Have you ever been around a perfectionist? Everything has to be done a certain way. This kind of person, you never feel like you measure up. You're in this relationship and you never feel like you can measure up to their expectations. They are perfectionists. Do they rub us the wrong way sometimes? Do we have any perfectionists here? Don't raise your hand. Okay, don't raise your hand. Perfectionists can be difficult to deal with, can't they? The next kind of person is the forceful type. These are the pushy people. And we have trouble with pushy people. Do you like pushy salesmen when they call you on the phone, you're trying to eat, and they're going to sell you something and they're not taking no for an answer? Or people that are always trying to force their way. They're going to have their way. These are pushy people. Then we have people who always put other people down. In fact, I'm going to tell you, most of those people are insecure. Because the only way they can feel good about themselves is to put somebody else down. But we need to see beyond that. We need to see beyond that and try to understand what they have been through. Then you have extra needy people. They need your attention all the time. These people can have lots of problems. These people can have lots of disappointments in their life. And if we're not careful, we will avoid these people. We will push them away. And it only makes their problem bigger. We need to find ways that we can minister to these people and, yes, even have a relationship with them and, yes, even help them overcome their difficulty. Then we have angry people. You ever been around somebody just angry all the time? There's a reason. They're always blowing up. Then you got gripers. Yeah. Then you got wishy-washy people. They're on this side and this side. This side, they can't make up their mind. Wishy-washy, wishy-washy. They're always, never can make up their mind. They just drive you up a wall. So what do we do with those people? We try to understand them. We try to help them if we can. You can't help everybody. But listen, we're called in this world to touch people. And not just people who's got it all together. We're called to touch people. Should we get even with this people? No. The only people that you should try to get even with are people who have helped you. That's the only kind of people you need to get even with, is people who have helped you. Okay. Let's wind it up with this. Learn to live a life of gratitude. Learn to live a life of gratitude. This is so big. When we take time to be grateful, it's amazing how focused we can stay in our lives. Otherwise, we get to taking our blessings for granted. We are the most blessed nation in the world. Even with all of our messy stuff that we've got going on, we are the most blessed nation in the world. There's a story in the Bible. Remember the story of the 10 lepers? They came to Jesus. And Jesus told them to go show themselves to the priest. This is found in Luke, the 17th chapter. You can read it later. But he says, go show yourself to the priest. And when a leper was cleansed, that's what he had to do. He had to go, the priest had to do tests on him to see if he was clean. So before they were clean, he says, go show yourself to the priest. As they were going, all 10 of them were cleansed. All 10 of them were cleansed. One of them turns around and comes back, and he's a Samaritan, which is not a Jew, or he's a half-Jew. He comes back and falls down and worships Jesus. And Jesus says, were there not 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? They were not grateful. This man stopped to give thanks. And it's amazing, if you'll look in that verse of Scripture, all of those other guys were cleansed, but you know what he said to this man? He says, go your way, you have been made whole. There's a difference in being cleansed and being made whole. All of those lepers were cleansed, but only one of them was made whole. Why? Because he discovered the life of gratitude. And part of our healing, part of our growth as Christians, this is one of the reasons that we do the communion service, is so that you can come and celebrate and remember and count your blessings and remember what the Lord has done and worship and love. It's a time to give thanks and be grateful. But listen, we don't just need to do it when we're here at the church. Some of you drive and work. Take time to give thanks. Get up early in the morning, and before your mind gets too active, count your blessings and give thanks. Learn to live the life of gratitude. You'll love greater when you can do that. You'll love God first. See, when you realize what God has done for you, it increases your love for Him. Then you can take that love that's been shed abroad in your heart, and you can turn that around, and you can love other people with that. So let's learn to love completely. Amen? All right.